Mike Vrabel apparently learned his lesson last year about speaking too soon or too definitively. He and Rand Carthen apparently are trying to learn all they can this year about the top quarterbacks available in the draft. The Titans have a history. Will we learn anything more about that history this season based on how they look on a particular, how they dress, shall we say, on a particular Sunday? All that and more in this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast with our usual crew to dissect all the important issues surrounding this team at the moment. Denard Walker, former Titans cornerback. Denard, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good this evening. How you doing today, David?
Doing great. John Glennon, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Hope you guys are also.
Doing great. And I am David Beauclair. And I need to remind you that the Believe in Titans podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. And Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting. Everything from pro and college basketball, or at least what's left of the latter, to the UFC, MMA, and more. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. With live betting options, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, BetOnline is truly the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite leagues and events. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline.ag, it's where the game starts. All right, gentlemen, Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthen met the media again this week at the NFL owners' meetings, as they did a few weeks back at the Combine. This week, Mike Vrabel was asked about Ryan Tannehill once again, and he said in part, but to make predictions, I think I've been through this last year. I'm not going to commit to anybody being on our roster in September. I've seen it change too quickly. Of course, we want Ryan as our quarterback and everyone else that's helped us win. That's what we want. Of course, he said last year that as long as he was coach of the Tennessee Titans, A.J. Brown would be part of that team. And weeks later, A.J. Brown was a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. Mike Vrabel, of course, remained head coach of the Tennessee Titans and had his worst season to date. So John, we'll start with you. How much more comfortable should, if at all, Ryan Tannehill feel right now based on that sort of reassurance?
Very little, in my opinion. I hardly think that was definitive. Ryan is our man. He's going to guide us. He's going to lead us forward in the fall. And as you mentioned, I think some of it certainly was, Mike Vrabel probably being a little bit gun-shy after talking about A.J. Brown and saying, as long as I'm here, you're not going anywhere, and then later we learned further texts that he had sent to A.J. Brown, this came from Darren Bates' podcast that, he had told A.J., all this trade talk is nonsense as far as I'm concerned, so on and so forth. So I feel certain some of it at least is Mike Vrabel being a little gun shy following that. He didn't like to have to eat his words basically at the presser after A.J. Brown was traded last year. But still, at the same time, you feel like if Ryan Tannehill was coming on and the Titans were coming off years like they did in 2019 or 2020 when Ryan Tannehill was lighting it up, when the Titans were winning game after game, you don't think, at least I don't think, there would be that hesitation, that kind of wishy-washiness. I don't feel like if I'm Ryan Tannehill, I'm still not sleeping any sounder at this point. I guess he basically just has to sort of expect the unexpected, go about his training, try to recover from his injury and stay prepared for anything that might occur in the next few weeks. If I had to still have to make a guess, I would still say that Ryan Tannehill is the guy moving forward. But that statement there does nothing to comfort him.
Denard, as a player, does Ryan Tannehill pay attention to anything Mike Vrabel or Rand Carthen say about him in the media, or is it, you know, do you have a direct line of communication with those guys where you say, hey, just talk to me, tell me what I need to know, and I'm good to go here for the off season, whatever.
Well, he's not paying attention to us. Let's just say that.
Right.
That's just the way it works. You know, I was the same way, and I'll be honest with you, John and David, we don't pay. As a former player, you do not pay any attention of what's going on outside of the building. And what I mean by that is you can only control what you can control. I've been in that situation before. You know, I've been back in 2000 after a bad year. What was that? That Super Bowl. Unfortunately, I played terrible. And then there was all of these speculations that Donald Mitchell was going to be the left cornerback coming in 2000. Do you think that I paid any attention to that? No. What you do is go out there and handle your business. And that's what RT's been doing since he's gotten to Nashville. David, this is not his first rodeo. You know, they ousted him out of Miami. We know what happened. He ends up coming to Tennessee. He revitalizes his career. He revitalizes his career. He's been one of the most consistent players on that team. And let's not forget, last year he was having a really good football season until he got injured.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, by all accounts, he is in the building and he is rehabbing the ankle and putting that sort of work in still. So it's not like he's in Florida off on his own. The only, you know, the only sort of contact he has with the team is through media reports or whatever. You would think you would think he has a pretty clear picture of where he stands. But I agree with John. You know, the lack of a complete definitive, you know, Ryan is our guy. There's no concerns about that. You know, Rand Carthen sort of addressed this in similar terms a couple weeks ago. It feels like it very much the case of, yes, he is the quarterback right now, but we're open to change if somebody can change our mind. I think we've said that here. What it will take to change the Titans' mind, I don't know. Is it the opportunity to draft a quarterback in the first round, sitting at number 11? There's some talk that one of the top young quarterbacks could fall to the Titans at number 11. Of course, at number 11, they're within range of the getting into the top 10. You know, do you have to get to 9 to 8, wherever, to get one of these guys? But it's been reported by the team's official website that Rand Carthen was at Ohio State to watch CJ Stroud's pro day. He was at Alabama to watch Bryce Young's pro day, and at Kentucky to watch Will Levis's, and plans to be at Florida to see Anthony Richardson, and Mike Vrabel is going to be at Tennessee to see Hendon Hooker. So they are looking at these guys. And, you know, the question is it simply their due diligence, which is the company line right now, or is there a serious interest in getting one of these guys? John, how do you look at that? What do you think the thought process is in terms of the young quarterbacks right now?
Seems to me they are taking a very, very hard look at the quarterbacks. Now, granted, when you go to a pro day, you are not only going to watch, in most instances, one player, you know, so in addition to quarterbacks, you know, you're seeing every prospect, a team like Alabama or Ohio State or, you know, Kentucky or whoever has out there. Just the same, you know, I think Rand Carthen in his interview on the team's website, you know, made it pretty clear that his first three trips were Kentucky, Alabama, and Ohio State, and I think tomorrow, which will be Thursday, that he was going to be seeing Florida's pro day, which is Anthony Richardson down there. So to me, I kind of think of it this way. You know, you're going to probably, at least in my opinion, I think you're going to hold on to Ryan Tannehill for this year, but I would suspect that's going to be the last year. You know, it's the last year of his contract in all likelihood. Unless we see an extension, so you're gonna have somebody, you know, the following year. So, you know, why not go after him this year? If you think he's good enough, if you think there's a quarterback out there that's good enough, fits the system, that can win, this seems like a very good year to do it, because how often are you going to be at 11 and not have to move up, not have to give up necessarily an arm and a leg to move up? You know, most seasons with Mike Vrabel here, they've drafted higher because they've had a better record. So it seems like a pretty good, you know, place to go for the quarterback here. And then after that, I think the question becomes, you know, are you moving up a little bit and maybe thinking of a Will Levis or a Anthony Richardson, or are you really getting bold and maybe moving up, you know, to say that number two or three spot there, I guess I should say number three spot, and get, you know, maybe a Bryce Young. If the speculation seems to hold right now that Carolina, you know, maybe favors C.J. Stroud there at number one. And you look at Bryce Young and the numbers he has put up, and also the fact that he played for Bill O'Brien, offensive coordinator there. We know that Bill O'Brien has ties to Mike Vrabel. He has ties to Tim Kelly. You know, probably good scouting in that respect. So I think that becomes the next question. If we're going to go for a quarterback, how far do we want to go up, and who do we want to go for? Or do we want to just stay pat and hope that a Levis or an Anthony Richardson is still around at number 11?
You make an interesting point in that with Ryan Tannehill under contract for one more season, the Titans do have sort of the luxury of time, regardless of what they decide in this. So, but Denard, so I'll ask you, is the Titans' apparent interest in these quarterbacks more of a statement on how they feel about Ryan Tannehill or about Malik Willis, do you think?
I think it's more of a statement about the future, because if you look at it, David, you got to have what next year? Ron would be 35 when the season starts. So not to mention, I think it's safe to say we're not talking much about Malik here. Last year, we was having a lot of conversation about Malik Willis. So where is he in the equation? That's why I want to ask you two, because last year we were raving about his accuracy, his arm strength, his ability to throw those tight passes, his athleticism, the fact that he can run, what he did at Liberty. And now all of a sudden, where do we put Malik in this equation? Because you can go out right now and let's say, do you anticipate C.J. Stroud at number 11? I don't think he's going to be there. I think he's going to be gone. So are you sold on Richardson, Anthony Richardson at Florida? No, I don't think he's the future for this Tennessee team. What about next year? Do you think that you can say, listen, let's go ahead and go with RT. We have Malik coming back for a second year. He can only get better, hopefully. And maybe if it's a bad move this year, you still got Caleb Williams next year. I mean, that could be a possibility for the future.
Yeah, it's a great question. Where does Malik Willis stand with this organization right now? And I can't get past, I know we talked about it here, I can't get past Rand Carthen talking about how he likes, quote unquote, anticipatory passers. And, you know, Malik Willis may be a lot of things. Right now, for certain, he is not an anticipatory passer. He's a guy who wants to see his receiver open or coming open before he gets him the ball. He will not throw to a spot and trust that the receiver is going to be there. That was that anybody who watched him saw that. Mike Vrabel talked about it publicly. It creates an interesting sort of in draft dynamic to me if the Titans get one of those guys at 11. And you're starting to hear a lot more buzz about, you know, for a long time it was those four quarterbacks. It was Young, Stroud, Levis, and Richardson. And now you're starting to hear more about Hendon Hooker in that conversation. And you know, Hooker is an interesting prospect to me, because he's played a lot of football, played in two different systems, was productive at both places and whatnot. And all of a sudden, when you're talking about 11 and you know, can one of five quarterbacks get to 11? I think absolutely that's possible. So to me, it creates this scenario. If the Titans get a quarterback either at number 11 or they move up a few spots to get one on the first day of the draft, Then maybe you spend the day Friday, those hours leading into the draft, which usually starts, what, about 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, maybe Central Time. You have all day to shop Malik Willis. And there's probably a good chance that somebody out there really likes Malik Willis and would give you a nice draft pick or two to get him and take their chances with him. So, I mean, let's forward the question to you, John. I mean, where does Malik Willis stand with this team right now? And is the Titans' apparent interest in these young quarterbacks more a statement about Willis than it is about Ryan Tannehill?
I think it's probably a little bit of both because they realize Ryan Tannehill is coming to the end of a contract and is not a young man. But I think at the same time, like David, you said, you had trouble getting past the phrase anticipatory throwing. For me, what I have trouble getting past is the pretty obvious last year that you know, towards the end of the year, after Malik Willis had already started multiple games for the Titans, after he had been with the Titans all offseason and through the bulk of the season, when they needed somebody in a desperate situation that they needed to win with, they picked up a guy, you know, off a practice squad who'd never started an NFL game and started him in a week and a half later after he arrived in Tennessee. And I have trouble with that. And I realize no one was expecting Malik Willis to start as a rookie. I realize that there's growth and that he's a project as well. But to me, that just, I don't know. I have trouble getting past that red flag there, that after having starts, after having spent so much time, he was not the guy that the Titans said, all right, you know, you're our guy, go win us a game, get us in the playoffs. No, it was Josh Dobbs. So to me, I don't know. I have trouble thinking that he is the future, even though, you know, he's going to be better, certainly. But I think that they have difficulty looking at him as the future right now. And that's why I think there's a good chance they're looking at a quarterback.
And we should say Josh Dobbs, of course, is out of the picture. He has gone back to Cleveland, and there was some interest among Titans fans of maybe giving him another shot to see how that played out. Denard, if it happens that the Titans don't get a quarterback, you still comfortable with Malik Willis as number two going into this season?
Yes, because he's only a rookie. You know, let's not forget this is his first year there. So I wasn't anticipating Malik coming in this year and lighting it up. And then not to mention, you know, Ron went down, so he was thrown in the mix. Let's not forget that Malik went into Arrowhead and pretty much outplayed Patrick Willis. Now, I know, listen, I wouldn't say outplayed, but I mean, for the most part, Tennessee did have a chance to win the game. But that's what you want to see out of the young guy. Listen, he struggled this year. You got a new offensive coordinator in Tim Kelly. Tim Kelly is magnificent when it comes to developing quarterbacks. Right now, let's just be honest. Malik is a work in progress. I don't anticipate rookies coming in and making that huge of a jump. And then, so let's just say you did get someone like Will Levis. What if Bryce Young or Anthony Richardson was there? I mean, do you think that they're going to come in right away and light it up? I'm not anticipating that. What happens if they struggle?
Yeah.
Why I think you stick with Ryan Tannehill.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
And you can add a veteran, to be a third guy on the practice squad, whatever, you know, kind of as you did with Logan Woodside, and maybe somebody with even a little more experience than Woodside, where you give yourself you give yourself options should Ryan Tannehill get hurt again. And you can say, is this a game we can win with Malik Willis the way we did at Houston last year? Although presumably Willis would be able to do more in his second year than just throw 10 passes in a game and help the Titans win. Or do you say we've got this guy on the practice squad, you know, whether it's another Matt Barkley type or Trevor Siemian, guys who have had that job, Kevin Hogan,
let's not forget Blaine Gabbert out there, Davey. I'm kidding, listeners. I'm kidding. Blaine Gabbert will not be back.
No, Blaine Gabbert will not be back. But you know, Denard, you raised the possibility a short time ago here of a bad enough season that potentially the Titans could be in position to draft a Caleb Williams, for example, next year. And let's note that our friends at Bet Online have projected the over under for the Titans win total at 7.5. For 2023, which means they're looking at them as basically about as competitive as a team as they ultimately turned out to be last year. If that sounds unpleasant to you, consider that there are only five teams with lower over under win projections for this season. They are Green Bay, Indianapolis, Green Bay at 7, Indianapolis, Tampa Bay at 6.5. Arizona at 5.5 and Houston at 5.5. John, is 7.5 a good number? Where would you fall on that? What do you think? How accurate do you think a number that is for this team right now?
My initial reaction was, hey, I'd put down $1 on the over on that. I mean, the Titans, in fact, they've done very well up until last year. Hitting the over in terms of projected season wins, I think they were from 2017 to 2021, they were only one of two teams, the Titans and the Saints, were the only teams that either hit their projected win totals or went above each of those 5 years. So last year, you would think is the anomaly, when they did not reach that, and you say, why was it an anomaly? Well, certainly the injuries to key players and the failure to replace A.J. Brown adequately, come into play there. So, my initial thought was, I'd put $1 on the over there. But then, I looked at the opponents and start trying to add up the wins. And I'm saying, all right, I'm going to give you Houston 2. I'm going to give you a sweep of the Texans. I'm going to give you a break even with Indy and Jacksonville. I'll give you a win over Atlanta at home, Desmond Ridder. The Panthers, I believe, is at home also, and maybe at the Bucks. And all of a sudden, you're at 7 wins there. And I'm looking at the rest of the schedule. I'm like, I'm not too sure. All of a sudden, you got the Ravens, you got Seattle, Pittsburgh, Browns. They're all possible, but it wasn't as sure a thing as I started going through the opponents there. And it's, we should, of course, preface this by saying it's March, and we don't know what this roster is going to look like, in another month, couple months, 3 months, whatever it is, we might be looking at the roster and saying, oh, yeah, that's a 9-win team. Or on the other hand, maybe that's a 5-win team. But as of right now, I kind of changed my mind after my initial gut feel. I'm kind of looking at more like a 7 win season. I have to put my $1 on under at this point.
Yeah, I would have, before 2022, I would have been willing to bet that a Mike Vrabel team would not lose 7 games in a row. I mean, it just, they're always competitive. They always have a good plan. They're in a division with some that never seems to have everybody strong at the same time. It's I would have a year ago, I would have said anything in that neighborhood is ridiculous. But we saw them lose 7 in a row. We saw them finish at 7-10. We saw them just not be able to find answers down the stretch last year. And the offensive line has been torn up. Are you going to be able to put that thing together in a way that Derrick Henry can get back to doing some Derrick Henry things, and Ryan Tannehill can stand in the pocket and make the decisions he wants to? Again, it's only March. There's a lot of time, and Rand Carthen said that as much this week too, that there is still time to add to this roster and do some things that they want to do. But right now, 7. I think 7.5 is a really good number, because it's 7 or 8 seems to be about the max for me in terms of what this team can muster. Denard, how do you look at it? I'm sure this is, as a former player, this is the kind of discussion that you really dislike. But is 7.5 a good over and under number for this team?
I don't remember having this conversation in March.
Let me ask you this then. I mean, guys will look around the locker room when they gather here in a couple of weeks for the start of OTAs. Mm-hmm. Guys will know, won't they? Hey, we're a good team, or we're a better team than people think we are, or God, there's just not enough guys here. I mean, if the guys in the room will they not look at that in those terms?
No, you always have a belief that you're a good team. What's the reasoning of going out there and practice? Everybody believes at the start of the season that they have a chance to win it all. And when I was looking at this Tennessee right now, looking at everything, let's say it's just March, it was interesting. I said, John, I was actually going to match you, but let's not forget that this was a team that was 7-3 before the injuries.
Now, and darn near beat Kansas City, by the way.
You took the words right out of my mouth. They had that game in Kansas City, and that was demoralizing. Let's not forget. But what was interesting is that the Titans are one of seven teams that open at 7.5 games. It's the fourth lowest opening odds in the NFL. And this is a team that they were decimated by injuries. Let's not forget, John. Let's not forget, David. They did fire their general manager midseason. That was a huge loss, and it was a distraction. And we talked about that being a distraction, which ended up hindering that team going forward. Let's not forget right now, we're talking about last week, we alluded to the fact Kevin Byard declining to take a pay cut. That can be another demoralizing hit for this organization. And last but not least, there was some talk about, and Rand Carthon saved his behind. He says, no, I didn't say that, but there were some allegations earlier on about the King being shopped around destination Miami. I would say, please don't send the King to Miami. But again, there is a lot of distractions. So right now I'm going to have to go under because they have so many issues. But this was a big hit. Look at some of the key players that they lost this offseason. I know Bud Dupree, we talked about him being injured. He was kind of a non-factor this year. Robert Woods, I like Robert Woods. He showed up when his numbers called. He's not in Green Bay. Ben Jones, that's a huge hit. Taylor Lewan, Taylor, hey, when he's on the field, he's one of the best left tackles in the business. But again, his time was up. But the biggest hit, and that's why I'm going under, is, man, they let Austin Hooper walk in free agency. That, to me, I'm telling you, I still have a headache, and I'm like, Rand, how did y'all let Austin Hooper go to Las Vegas? You're talking about one of your most consistent players on offense last year.
Chig Okonkwo.
I ain't going to give Chig. I'm not going to praise him yet. He's still a rookie, David.
Yeah, but I think that's a big part of it, though. I think you look at what Chig Okonkwo did, and coaches and management say, okay, let's get more opportunities for him to be on the field, and we'll try. I agree with you. I'd like to see a guy do it for 2 years before I make a huge. Huge commitment to him for that. I mean, I think that probably had to factor into the thinking there.
Chig Okonkwo is not going to be your in line slash pass catching guy as well. And that was a little bit of the role. I'm not saying Hooper was a great blocker, but he could do a little bit more. And that's just never.
And certainly the early part of the year, they were asking him to do it a lot.
Yeah, right. That's something that Chig is not, you know, he's not going to fill that kind of role. He's your pass catcher. He's your motion tight end, you know, your H-back kind of tight end if necessary. But they certainly need to find someone who can both block and catch passes. And you know, yeah, to Denard's point, I mean, Hooper's numbers weren't huge, but he made some big catches last year. You know, a lot of third down, tough contested catches. I thought he was a guy that they might, you know, re-sign. I thought it would be worth re-signing him also.
Yeah, well, that is. I'm glad you guys brought that up because that is a story that I think has been underplayed in Nashville and just in general with discussions with this team. There's, you know, there's been so much attention paid to the offensive line and to the salary cap cuts and this sort of thing that, you know, and Austin Hooper, who came in here and did a lot of what they signed him to do last year, then they just let him walk. I mean, it was a good, affordable contract that you got him on. It felt like, you know, this was an opportunity for something, you know, a really nice sort of relationship. And, And now he's with the Raiders, and he's Jimmy Garoppolo's guy, I guess. But you guys both mentioned in talking about potential wins, the opportunity to beat the Texans twice, and certainly I think everybody in the division is looking at them this way. But if that happens, there's also the possibility the Titans could kick the Texans when they're down a little bit, in that for the first time, the franchise officials have said the Titans will bring back the throwback Houston Oilers uniforms for one game. Now, they did bring them back in an anniversary celebration for the AFL a few years back as part of a league-wide initiative. But this is the first time simply the Tennessee Titans doing a throwback game, and there's a lot of speculation about whether that will be against the Houston Texans or not. Now, Denard, you joined this franchise in 97, so mm-hmm. your first year was here in Nashville in Tennessee. Was there a lot of connection to Houston back then, and how, you know, do you think it's right that the team would do it against the Texans?
Well, I think it's fair, and let me say this, David, because you have to understand Houston is an expansion team. They've moved on. The divorce has been finalized. That was, what, 25 years ago, 1997? So everybody's moved on. What's disrespectful, now let's say if you're Baltimore and you go back to Cleveland, that would be interesting if you decide you wanted to try to put some clothes at Cleveland Browns. No, hey, the Baltimore wouldn't be leaving Cleveland. They would get out of there. But again, Houston is an expansion team. Let's not forget that. This was an organization that was founded by the McNair family in 1999, and then they started playing in 2001. So this is like Carolina. This is like Jacksonville now. This is not like a move where you're, you know, Oakland and you move to L.A. and then back to Oakland again. So it's like for Tennessee. And let me ask you something. Is this going to be a throwback of the uniforms, the Love You Blues, where Earl Campbell and, you know, like what I wore, or is this going to go back to the days of Kenny Houston, where the gray helmets, the old school? I'm talking about the Houston Oilers in the 60s.
No, this is going to be the Love You Blue. Like the Tennessee Oilers. That should be noted. 97, 98, you were the Tennessee Oilers, and you still wore the blue with the white helmets and the red and gray oil, Derek.
So are they going to wear it? It depends on where they're wearing. Are they wearing it in Houston?
No, they'd wear it here.
That's what I was about to say. They'll be okay if they wear it in Nashville. If they wear it in Houston, you better make sure they have some good security down there to escort them on the field and off the field and back to the airport and make sure they get home safe to Nashville.
John, fair or foul to do it against the Texans, or should they do it against somebody else?
I say, what the heck? Spice up the rivalry. The AFC South needs a little rivalry, right? Let's get things stirred up a little bit. It's interesting to me, like, I don't think Nashville, for the most part, cares that much. You know, I don't think there's a great, reminiscence of the Houston Oilers in Nashville. But obviously, the owner, you know, it's a different story because she is the daughter of Bud Adams, of course. And we know all the history, and he was the original guy. But it's interesting to me that she wants to hold on to that so badly, and that Houston might feel so badly they wanting the to hold on to that history when the two sides divorced, you know, years and years ago. So what, why now would either side, you know, care so much about the past when there's a divorce? But all that said, yeah, I'd say put them on when the Texans come to town, get a little juice rolling around here. And I think, my second choice, I was looking at the opponents again. Second choice, if they don't wear it with the Texans, LA Chargers, another original, AFL team along with the Houston Oilers. When the Oilers became the first league champs of the AFL, they defeated the Chargers in 1961, 24-16. So that would be very appropriate, I think, to wear them against the Chargers. It was the LA Chargers, actually, that one year before they went to San Diego. And then maybe third choice might be the Bengals. This is a team that's kind of manhandled you, you know, the last three times here, or the last three times in general, two of them in Nashville. So if you want a little extra juice, get the crowd a little extra pumped up, maybe put them on against the Bengals.
Let's keep in mind that the reason this franchise is named the Tennessee Titans is that folks in Nashville raised hell about wanting a name change, that they that they said that the Oilers are not our team, and Bud Adams finally gave in and said, okay, I don't want to, but I will change the name. It turned out to be a good business decision. I will say, you know, based on some of her business decisions, I think his daughter has a little bit of a mean streak in her, and I think you know, probably hasn't forgotten the fact that the reason this team is in Nashville is civic leaders and local government in Houston did not deal well with her father, left him what he felt was no choice but to leave. And this could be her way to stick it to Houston all these years later. So the schedule will be forthcoming in the next few weeks, and these things will become clearer. We will look forward to that and much more, but that'll do it for this episode of the Believe in Titans podcast by Bet Online.